Welcome back to the Betrothal Guys podcast. We're going to be doing the second part of Genesis 24, going through that and discussing what it means about betrothal and the marriage that Isaac and Rebekah entered in the chapter.
The servant of Abraham went to get a wife for Isaac from Abraham's relatives. Mm-hmm. He went back to Abraham's home country, asked for a miraculous sign.
Yeah.
Got an answer, a big answer. Rebekah is the one that God picked out, appointed, as it says in King James.
We stopped at the point where Rebekah is just about finished watering the camels of Abraham's servant, which was exactly coinciding with the sign that he asked for from God. And so we're ready to see how things proceeded from there once that sign that he prayed for and had answered is now occurring. What does he do next? And so we pick up the story in verse 22 of Genesis chapter 24. And it came to pass, as the camels had done drinking, that the man took a golden earring of half a shekel weight, and two bracelets for her hands of 10 shekels weight of gold, and said, "Whose daughter art thou? Tell me, I pray thee, is there room in thy father's house for us to lodge in?" And she said unto him, "I am the daughter of Bethuel, the son of Milcah, which she bare unto Nahor." She said moreover unto him, "We have both straw and provender enough, and room to lodge in." And the man bowed down his head and worshipped Yahweh, and he said, "Blessed be Yahweh, God of my master Abraham, who has not left destitute my master of his mercy and his truth. I being in the way, Yahweh led me to the house of my master's brethren."
He's excited because Abraham told him to get a relative.
He told him to go back to his home country, to his own people, to get a wife for Isaac.
Right. And so it turns out she is one of the descendants of Abraham's brother.
Yeah, she is.
So the servant's excited because it's just another confirmation, basically, that the one who did the sign that he asked for is not only that, she's also definitely a relative, like Abraham asked for, of the right tribe. I mean, relative, she's not a real close relative.
Not a close relative, she's a distant relative, but yeah, she's of the right clan that Abraham sent his servant to. And so everything has fallen into place for the servant. Yahweh has blessed him. The last part was he was watching Rebekah to see if Yahweh had shown favor. And now he's seeing that, yes, this is true. And so he falls down on his face and he blesses Yahweh and says, Yahweh has shown great mercy to Abraham.
And the presents he gives to Rebekah are very nice. Very nice jewelry. It's more than I found in any records of Mesopotamian gifts to brides.
Yeah, it was an excessive amount of a gift for the bride compared to, yeah, the records that we see in ancient Mesopotamia.
He may have been putting an earring, not necessarily an earring, but a nose ring in, and that may have been specifically something that a bride would have. If you see some of the Indian cultures, they do a nose ring when they're married.
Right. The word there is not specifically to ear. It can be face. Possibly a nose ring or a very obvious symbol of bride. Bride status.
It's very likely for that time and place that he was giving her a bridal gift. Another thing to note, it's sort of a side note, but a lot of people think that this is the servant's name is Eleazar, because in another part of the Bible, it says Abraham's steward was named Eleazar. But in this story, for whatever reason, it doesn't say what his name is. He may have been the same guy.
It may have been the same guy, but that's also possible that Abraham had gone on to another steward either before or after this. So usually we'll say Abraham's servant here just because we know it's Abraham's servant and we're not absolutely positive that it was the one named Eleazar. So it's also interesting that the servant, he gives her these bridal gifts, and he also asks about her father's house. Is that somewhere I can come and lodge? I think if you get further into understanding about betrothal, you'll see why it's so important that the next thing he does, he says, okay, this is the one. I need to know who her father is and where he is. I need that next. So you'll see the importance of that in other passages in the scripture. So he's looking for her father's house, and she says, yeah, there's even enough room for you to lodge there. You can bring your whole retinue. And remember, he had servants and 10 camels. And so they're going to come, and he's going to go to her father's house. Father's name is Bethuel, and he's going to do stuff there.
We're going to pick up in verse 28. And the damsel ran and told them of her mother's house these things. And Rebekah had a brother, and his name was Laban. And Laban ran out unto the man unto the well. And it came to pass, when he saw the earrings and bracelets upon his sister's hands, and when he heard the words of Rebekah his sister, saying, Thus spake the man unto me, that he came unto the man. And behold, he stood by the camels at the well. And he said, Come in, thou blessed of Yahweh. Wherefore standest thou without? For I have prepared the house and room for thy camels. And the man came into the house, and he ungirded his camels, and gave straw and provender for the camels, and water to wash his feet, and the man's feet that were with him. And there was meat set before him to eat. But he said, I will not eat until I have told mine errand. And he said, Speak on.
So we've got Rebekah going back to her family, and then her brother, Laban, comes out to bring this man back to the house, and says, I've got everything ready. They get there, you know, they're washing his servant's feet, they're washing his feet, they've got food for his camels, they've got food for him set out for him, and, you know, everything's going pretty smoothly, and he's back at Bethuel's house. Now, Laban is the one who went out and got Abraham's servant, and brought him back, and some people will make the mistake of thinking that Bethuel is not there, but we'll see from the story, she says, you know, the house of her father Bethuel, and also we'll see that Bethuel is actually there. Maybe he's of a certain age where it makes more sense for the younger Laban, his son, to run out and get the servant. Maybe that's a position of honor that the father bestowed on Laban. We don't really know for sure, but Laban goes out and gets the servant, but Bethuel is there, and now they're all sitting down there, Abraham's servant, ready to eat, and that, you know, they've served him food.
So Laban is very impressed with the jewelry that she's wearing. And again, I think that, and other commentators have thought the same, that from study of history and everything, it sounds like she's already wearing, like, you would get to give to a bride for her wedding adornment. And wearing wedding, you know, fancy jewelry was a thing, as you can see in other places in the Bible. So I think she's already basically been decked out as a bride. And so that's a double reason, not only the expense of the gift, but Laban's already going, okay, wow, someone's proposing in a big way.
Yeah, we can see that this is definitely, we want this for marriage setup. And even just the lavishness of the gifts itself is telling that this is about a wedding. This is about one clan coming to talk to another clan about this.
Someone's already so taken with Rebekah that they're basically already, in their mind, it's a done deal, is what I would think the brother's interpretation of the setup is, which would be true.
But he's so taken with Rebekah because Yahweh pointed her out.
Right. So he's coming out to see what this guy is all about, because he already is suspicious of what it probably is about. But he invites them to come so they can find out. And they feed the camels. That's what provender is. And so they set food before the servant, and it's significant that the servant won't eat yet. He has to tell the story first.
Yeah. So he's not going to eat yet. Why is he not going to eat? And I think this one takes a little bit of study, but if you go through the scriptures, you'll see that covenants are quite often, maybe even always, confirmed by eating together. And so they're getting, he's saying, I think there should be a covenant here. I want this to be a covenantal meal, not just a meal. I want this to be a covenantal meal. Let's talk about this covenant that we're making for Isaac and Rebekah. Then I'll eat. Once the covenant is in place, then we can eat as a confirmation of that covenant.
Right. I can't eat your food unless I know you're going to agree to what I'm saying.
Right. He doesn't. If they're not going to agree, then for him to eat their food would be, in a way, deceptive.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I am Abraham's servant. And Yahweh has blessed my master greatly, and he has become great, and he hath given him flocks and herds and silver and gold and men servants and maid servants and camels and asses. And Sarah, my master's wife, bare a son to my master when she was old, and unto him hath he given all that he hath. And my master made me swear, saying, Thou shalt not take a wife to my son of the daughters of the Canaanites, in whose land I dwell. But thou shalt go unto my father's house, and to my kindred, and take a wife unto my son. And I said unto my master, Peradventure the woman will not follow me. And he said unto me, Yahweh, before whom I walk, will send his angel with thee, and prosper thy way. And thou shalt take a wife for my son of my kindred and of my father's house. Then shalt thou be clear from this my oath, when thou comest to my kindred. And if they give thee not one, thou shalt be clear from my oath. And I came this day unto the well, and said, O Yahweh, God of my master Abraham, If now thou do prosper my way which I go, behold, I stand by the well of water. And it shall come to pass that when the virgin cometh forth to draw water, and I say to her, Give me, I pray thee, a little water of thy pitcher to drink. And she say to me, Both drink thou, and I will also draw for thy camels. Let the same be the woman whom Yahweh has appointed out for my master's son. And before I had done speaking in my heart, behold, Rebekah came forth with her pitcher on her shoulder, and she went down unto the well and drew water. And I said unto her, Let me drink, I pray thee. And she made haste and let down her pitcher from her shoulder and said, Drink, and I will give thy camels drink also. So I drank, and she made the camels drink also. And I asked her and said, Whose daughter art thou? And she said, The daughter of Bethuel, Nahor's son, whom Milcah bare unto him. And I put the earring upon her face, and the bracelets upon her hands. And I bowed down my head and worshipped Yahweh and blessed Yahweh, God of my master Abraham, which had led me in the right way to take my master's brother's daughter unto his son. And now, if you will deal kindly and truly with my master, tell me, and if not, tell me, that I may turn to the right hand or to the left.
So that the servant basically gave a recap there of everything that's happened before, all the things we talked about in the first episode.
Yeah, so we see that, you know, Abraham told him that Yahweh was going to point the way, and that the servant asked Yahweh to show him the one, and Rebekah answered the sign. It tells about his sign, about him praying in his heart. He even tells, you know, what just happened, that he bows down and worshiped Yahweh.
He acknowledged that it was from God.
Yes. And he also acknowledges that if they say no, that it is no. That if, you know, in the first part of the story, Abraham confirms that if the woman, if Rebekah says no, that then he's clear of the oath. And here it also specifies that if you say no, then I'm going to turn left or right. I can't just take your daughter without your agreement to this covenant.
Mm-hmm. And we don't know what the servant was going to plan to do after that. Maybe he was just going to go home and tell Abraham, sorry, it didn't work out. Or maybe he was going to pray and ask God for another direction.
Yeah.
But it doesn't say. He was going to turn to the right hand or the left. Before I can do anything, I have to get your go ahead.
I think the servant at this point is pretty confident that he's not going to have to turn to the right hand or the left. Because he's already, you know, fallen down worshiping Yahweh, that Yahweh is clearly doing this. And at a certain point in this, with so much happening that makes it so obvious that Yahweh is in this, you could just know that it's going to roll all the way through.
Mm-hmm. Everything is already going so well. Sometimes you hit a hiccup, and that might have been what the sermon is going. This might be the off chance where one of you objects, and I have to sort through that before.
Yeah.
I mean, because her mother and her brother and her daddy are all there. So what if one of them wants to throw a spoke in the wheel? He might go, well, I might have to sort that out. But
so yeah, he's basically put the question to Bethuel and Laban, and now we're waiting to see what this answer will be.
In verse 50, it says, Then Laban and Bethuel answered and said, The thing proceedeth from Yahweh. We cannot speak unto thee bad or good. Behold, Rebekah is before thee. Take her and go, and let her be thy master's son's wife, as Yahweh hath spoken. And it came to pass that when Abraham's servant heard their words, he worshipped Yahweh, bowing himself to the earth. And the servant brought forth jewels of silver and jewels of gold and raiment and gave them to Rebekah. And he gave also to her brother and to her mother precious things. And they did eat and drink, he and the men that were with him, and tarried all night. And they rose up in the morning, and he said, Send me away into my master. And her brother and her mother said, Let the damsel abide with us a few days, at least 10, after that she shall go. And he said unto them, Hinder me not, seeing Yahweh hath prospered my way. Send me away, that I may go to my master. And they said, We will call a damsel and inquire at her mouth.
So the relatives agree that Yahweh has spoken. That's how they phrased it. Yahweh has spoken. This is his will. We're not gonna stop you in any way. So let it be the case. She should go be Isaac's wife. And the servant brings out gifts for the bride's family. Essentially, bride price. It reminds you of a bride price idea.
It is interesting. It just says it gives it to Rebekah and the brother and the mother, though not the father.
Yes.
Because normally in the Bible you'd always see a bride price given to a father.
Yeah.
But in this case, either the father is waiving it, because I'm suspicious he said, I have no right to ask a bride price because God has given her to you.
Yeah, I mean,
like,
that, it's,
like they kind of said, we can't say anything.
Yeah.
This is so much God's doing. That may have been the attitude. Or it's also possible in my mind that the expensive jewels on Rebekah, that basically yeah. Isaac is paying a bride price and dowry, essentially.
Yeah, because a lot of times the dowry was the bride price that was given to the father that he in turn gave to his daughter. But with the amount of riches that were already on Rebekah, and now in addition he's giving her more presents here, the need for the bride price being turned back to the dowry, in this case, it's almost like it's already happened.
Mm-hmm.
So you see that him giving presents to the family, though.
It's hard to say why we don't see a bride price in this story, but there are other bridal stories in the Bible where it doesn't mention the bride price. Either in this case, it was such a token exchange, it didn't even matter. You know, it wasn't significant. Like some of the ones that are mentioned, it's because it was unusual. So in this case, it may have either been something so boring that there was no point in mentioning it. Or, like I said, maybe it's possible it wasn't you even done for some reason.
Yeah. But we do still have a clear delineation that her father is saying, yes, I agree to this. Go forward in this.
You can have her.
And then he also, you see the servant then eat. Again, confirming this covenant that they're making, that Rebekah is going to be Isaac's wife.
No, and they're on agreement. They're okay with eating.
They're all in agreement, so now he'll eat the food to consolidate that agreement. And then when he gets up in the morning, he's ready to go. He's going to take Rebekah and turn around and leave the next morning. And her family, understandably, thinks that's a bit sudden. And they ask for 10 more days for Rebekah to stay there so they can say goodbye and all the things that they probably want to do, get used to this idea. Because for them, I mean, the servant's been traveling this direction, so he's been thinking about this wedding and taking this bride for a while. But for Rebekah and her family, this is pretty sudden.
I think you looked it up and you said it by camel. I can't remember now the exact time it probably would have taken, but probably at least a month.
Yeah, so somewhere 30 days is a decent estimate. It could have been a lot more with actual full-loaded camels. But yeah, probably somewhere in the neighborhood of a month.
Yeah, so he wants to hurry up and get back because, I mean, that means Abraham has to wait 2 whole months to find out how this is going to work out. But, so he wants her to go back and the brother and the mother say, no, let's wait a little bit. They probably want to throw some parties for her, you know, bridal showers and all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure they
don't have time to do anything if he's just going to pack up and leave.
Yeah, within less than 24 hours from the time the guy arrived. In fact, from evening to morning. So basically 12 hours later, he's asking to take Rebekah and leave. And they said, this is too fast. Let's ask her.
Yeah, we'll make her make the final decision then.
So again, we see an example where this isn't like an arrangement between one father and another father, you know, arranged marriage. She has no say. Again, they're asking Rebekah, what do you say? So we're back at verse 57. And they said, we will call the damsel and inquire at her mouth. And they called Rebekah and said unto her, wilt thou go with this man? And she said, I will go. And they sent away Rebekah their sister and her nurse and Abraham's servant and his men. And they blessed Rebekah and said unto her, thou art our sister, be thou the mother of thousands of millions, and let thy seed possess the gate of those which hate them. And Rebekah arose and her damsels, and they rode upon the camels and followed the man. And the servant took Rebekah and went his way.
When it says damsels, it means young ladies, usually. In this case, specifically, her damsels are probably her handmaids, her servants.
Yeah, so she's not coming into this marriage without her own servants and her own dowry, so to speak. She's coming to Isaac. The servant has Abraham's servant has a bunch of servants, his men there, and now they've got empty camels because they unloaded it all as gifts and stuff. And now they're bringing back Rebekah and her damsels on the camels.
And her nurse, who probably was someone that raised her, is another servant probably. Probably her mother's servant, you know, was also her nanny, you could say.
Yeah.
I kind of skipped over. We're supposed to recap the whole thing. So Rebekah, I mean, this is pretty important. Rebekah, they call Rebekah in and she says she will go, which probably surprised Laban and his mommy, because they probably were thinking she would be like, no, I need to have my little time to get ready and say bye to my friends and get all my stuff together. And I mean, this is probably a huge surprise to them that she would say, yeah, I'm ready.
But it is interesting that with all this, like we talked about, the excessive answer to the sign, everything falling exactly into place, and Rebekah is on board with this. She said, okay, yes, this is Yahweh's doing. I'm not going to try to slow down Yahweh's plan. I don't want to get in the way of God. If this is God's will for me, let's do it. Let's do it now. And that in itself shows a good submission to God on Rebekah's part. Mm-hmm. She said, I'll do it.
She seems like she has a fervor and probably a, you know, a spiritual inspired. Gift. I would say she's inspired by God to answer in a big way, in a way that maybe didn't even feel natural to her at the time. Because it wouldn't, it's not natural to go, sure, oh, a stranger wants to marry me. Yeah, I'm just going to hop on a camel, go next day.
Yeah. Yeah, that in the New Testament, it talks about the one of the gifts of the Spirit is the gift of faith. And it seems like Rebecca has this gift of faith that this is God, I'll do it. And mm-hmm. she's ready to step out in faith.
She's not going to worry about it and drag her feet. I wish I could say I'd done the same thing when you asked to marry me, but there was a little bit more feet dragging on my part. You didn't send me enough gold jewelry.
That was definitely it.
Yes, you could interpret her actions as mercenary, but even then you would think she'd go, well, I have a little bit of time. Surely he can wait a day or two. You know, a normal response might be, how about, you know, 3 days? Let's strike a bargain here. But no, she's just going to rip and go.
She's going to go. And so her family blesses her.
Oh, yeah.
And they give her a blessing as she departs. And I think that's a good thing to have going into marriage, is when the parents or the family blesses their child, in this case the daughter, but blesses their child to go into this marriage and go be who you're supposed to be. In this case, go be the mother of many nations, just like the promise through Abraham is. They're saying, yes, go, fulfill the blessing. Here's our blessing on you also. And I think that's a good thing to have in a betrothal mm-hmm. setting.
I wouldn't be surprised if their blessing was inspired by God, too. You know, that's, like you said, centered about having the millions. And
yeah. And it's interesting because all the blessings in Scripture are considered inspired. Mm-hmm. It's almost like when someone sets out to bless from a position of authority as a mother, as a father, as a grandfather in some cases, as the leader of Israel when Moses does it, you see this being essentially a prophetic blessing when it's spoken from that place of authority. And I think that's another thing why going into a marriage, having that authority blessing going into a marriage can be, you know, a big deal.
Yeah. It's sad that our modern American culture scoffs at that.
Right. But it's essentially a prophetic word. There can be so much good that's brought from that blessing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now it's considered to be extremely optional. We polled people one time on Facebook, mm-hmm. remember, how many people thought they needed to have the father's involvement for his daughter's marriage, and everybody was pretty much like it was negligible.
Yeah. Which is really sad because, again, this is the way Yahweh works, and he works with these blessings through the parents. And to miss out on that is really to miss out on so much that Yahweh wants for us.
At verse 62, and Isaac came from the way of the well, Laharoi, for he dwelt in the south country. And Isaac went out to meditate in the field at the eventide. And he lifted up his eyes and saw, and behold, the camels were coming. And Rebekah lifted up her eyes, and when she saw Isaac, she lighted off the camel. For she had said unto the servant, what man is this that walketh in the field to meet us? And the servant had said, it is my master. Therefore she took a veil and covered herself. And the servant told Isaac all the things that he had done. And Isaac brought her into his mother Sarah's tent, and took Rebekah, and she became his wife. And he loved her, and Isaac was comforted after his mother's death.
It sounds like Isaac had moved his location a little bit since the servant left. So it might have even been kind of sudden for the servant at this point, that they're suddenly arriving where Isaac is. The servant, when Rebekah sees Isaac out there meditating in the field in the evening like he usually did, again, this sounds like he's going out to have a quiet time with God. It's a mark of a man who is in a right place with God, that he's out there meditating in the field in the evening like he usually does. And then the servant said, recognized that's Isaac, that it must have been known in the whole clan that this is what Isaac does. He goes out and meditates in the field. There's Isaac. He's over there. And so then she gets down off the camel, puts on her veil to symbolize her bride status, and goes to him. And Isaac takes her after he listens to what the servant tells the whole story of what he did and what happened in the land of Nahor. And so then Isaac takes her to his mother Sarah's tent to establish her there. And it says that he took her and she became his wife. And he loved her. It's been about 3 years since Sarah died at this point. We know that from their ages. And so at this point that he's being comforted after his mother's death. So it was a good long while of a time period of mourning that Isaac had. And this is bringing a rejoicing and a joy back into his life, this gift from God. And the whole chapter is about how Yahweh did this and Yahweh said that. Yahweh caused her to be his bride. Yahweh appointed her. And so now Yahweh has brought this joy back into Isaac's life.
Yeah, it is interesting that he's out in the field meditating and probably, like you said, having a quiet time with God. And that's the very moment they show up. Like, here's your answer. He may have even been praying about the servant's way being prospered to bring him a wife.
That wouldn't be surprising at all.
And here comes your answer. But we're just guessing here, making up
our imagining. It doesn't say that, but, you know, it does say that he's out there meditating.
Yeah. And this is the first time we see putting on a cloth covering on a white woman's head to represent the marriage status of a woman. In the Bible. It crops up from here and there, but this is the first mention, I think.
Yeah, that a bride has a veil or a covering.
This story is why so many cultures that are based on the Bible, the wives do wear head coverings.
Yeah, almost any culture that's had contact with the...
The children of Abraham.
Yeah, with the children of Abraham, yeah. Pretty much practice it. And it dates back to this. And even there's some instructions in other places in the scripture that make it sound like it's a good thing to practice.
Mm-hmm. It is interesting that she picked that moment to put it on. In my study, there's a book I read about women in ancient Mesopotamia. And it said that there definitely was some kind of a thing where you would send a veil, sometimes by messenger, to the woman you were betrothing.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they said maybe they... Oh, it says it literally in one of the laws that you could put a veil over the woman you're marrying. Is this is like one part of the things they would do as a ceremony. It's interesting to me that she puts it on herself. And I think maybe that was on purpose. It's again her saying, I'm taking this on. I have a say and I'm saying I want to be your bride.
Yeah.
She doesn't wait for him to put it on her or a servant to put it on her. She's taking it on herself.
Yeah. She's putting it on herself and she's going to Isaac.
Mm-hmm.
Some people get this misconception that they immediately went into the tent and consummated the marriage. And they'll say, and Isaac brought her into his mother Sarah's tent and took Rebecca.
And she became his wife.
And she became his wife. The thing is, took, that word there, is not used for consummation. It's actually contrasted with consummation in many passages. He had taken her, but not consummated with her. So taking is not consummation there. It's not saying that they immediately jumped into the tent and started their sexual relationship.
10 minutes after meeting.
It actually would make more sense for it to be saying that they had... A covenantal ceremony or something like that would be more common usage for that word. Is that Isaac now says, yes, I put my personal stamp of approval on this woman that I see in front of me. Just like when she saw him in front of her, she put the covering on.
Yeah, when it says he take her as his bride,
yeah.
It probably was more like a formal acceptance.
Right.
It is interesting. He establishes her in his mother's tent, like you said. I think that in some ways it's saying that he's installing her as the new matriarch of the tribe now.
Yeah.
She's going ahead and putting her into, you know, it sounds kind of weird to take her in your mother's tent, but I think that was like the matriarch tent. So I'm going to put her in here because she's now the new female, you know.
Yeah,
she's my queen.
Yeah, she's going to be the queen of the clan, the woman side of things within the clan from now on.
And if you are still insistent that they didn't have any kind of wedding celebration or anything, they just went straight into a tent and they went ahead and had their honeymoon. It says and before it says he took her into the tent. And when Adam and Eve were post-garden, it says that Adam knew his wife and she conceived and she bore a child. You know, she birthed the son. Those ands can represent months. Or even years in the Bible, in Genesis. Yeah. And can mean that they had a time of betrothal before they consummated. It doesn't mean that they did that as strangers. They could have. I'm just saying that it's more likely that they had a wedding celebration.
Yeah.
I mean, Abraham had a feast when Isaac was weaned. So it's hard to believe he would not have a wedding feast, too.
Right. Yeah.
It's more likely there was some talking, there was some feasting, there was some time, and then they became physical.
So it was definitely an accepting of what the servant had done and a taking of the bride, a agreement that there's a covenant here before there's a physical relationship, just like we see throughout scripture that this is a wife by covenant. That's what makes her a wife, is she's a wife by covenant, by the agreement And then the physical relationship of marriage follows after that covenant. And so when it says she became his wife, again, we can just from the very usage of the words throughout Scripture, became his wife means they made a covenant. They had an agreement with each other.
Mm-hmm. And it says, and he loved her.
And he loved her. Like you're supposed to. Like Christ in the church. He's supposed to love his wife.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think it's necessarily saying he loved her because she was so lovable. But that's just what you do with your wife. You're supposed to love her. And hopefully he liked her, but you know.
You don't have to like someone to love someone. I mean, we're called to love our enemies. So it doesn't really matter if we're getting something in return. The agape love that we're called to show to our wives is from God. And it's a choice, an action, not just a feeling.
Mm-hmm. But there's no reason to think that the person that God handpicked for Isaac was not going to be to Isaac's liking.
No.
I suspect that
yeah.
there was an immediate draw. It might not be, though. Sometimes it takes some couples a while to warm up. If you look at arranged marriages around the world, sometimes it takes them a little bit to
Some seem to be right on board. You know, yeah. We kind of interest, and we've looked at a lot of them. Sometimes they seem to be right on board with each other and ready to jive, and sometimes it takes time. But it does seem like any marriage, even these arranged marriage, even the secularly arranged marriages that aren't mm-hmm. based on God's will at all, if the couple are committed to each other and actually put in the effort, that they do have a marriage after some amount of time.
Mm-hmm. You mean a true marriage of your heart and mind? A true marriage,
yeah, a marriage of heart and mind, an actual unity. And no, we're not suggesting, hey, arranged marriage works, so let's do it. No, we're saying do what God's will is, and you can expect, you know, do what God's will is, and then commit yourself to it and live agape love towards your spouse, and you can expect that when you follow Yahweh's will and you follow his ways, that you will have his blessing.
Yeah. A God-arranged marriage is what we're recommending.
Yes. Arranged marriage, but by God, not by people.
Yeah, that's what Isaac and Rebecca had. And that's what we would like for the single people that may be listening to this. You can have, it may not be as sensational as the Isaac and Rebecca story.
Right.
But I think that God-arranged marriages are still a thing.
Yes.
Because the Bible says that God is the same yesterday, today, and forever. So I think he still is a matchmaker. I've seen that written somewhere before by other people, but God still is in the business of matchmaking.
Just like Adam and Eve, just like Isaac and Rebecca.
Mm-hmm.
And just like we can testify ourselves, like Joshua and Leela, God is a matchmaker, and he's the best at it.
He's the best matchmaker. If you're new here, we are all about trying to help people take the path of the God-arranged marriage, or as we usually label it, a biblical betrothal. And so we make resources for that, and you can find them on the internet under Betrothal Guys. If you just say at Betrothal Guys, you should find us on several social media platforms. And also we have a website, betrothalandwedding.com. So please look us up and let us know that you listened.